everybody, and welcome to the StoreProds.com Video Games Podcast. As always, this podcast is brought to you by a fuck ton of sponsors, but today we are brought to you by ThinkGeek.com. Founded in 1999, ThinkGeek has grown from a fun side project started by a few computer geeks into a huge multi-million dollar e-commerce thing for all shit geek. They got, you know, geek drinks, game geek themed like clothing and accessories and shit. It is really awesome. So if you haven't checked out ThinkGeek, you definitely should. They have some really great stuff in there at really great prices. Like I said, click the link at the bottom page or any of the items that they have for ThinkGeek. Go check out some awesome stuff over at ThinkGeek. ThinkGeek, stuff for the smart masses. We also have our own stuff. It's not as awesome as ThinkGeek's, but it's there. So head over to desktopprods.com/store and check out some of our stuff. As always, we're accepting new design, art, and ideas and such. If you have an idea or art you'd like to send to us, please don't hesitate to send it to bovion@destroprods.com or post it in the t-shirt design thread on the forums. If we like it, we'll put on some products and pay you based to help those products sell if it is art. If you have an idea, unfortunately, we won't be able to pay you if we use it. We'll credit you, but we can't pay you. If you have art, you'll get paid, assuming it sells. I'm your host. Oh, also, just realize this, Extra Life 2013 has started.
Yeah, it has.
Yeah, so once again we have a team set up, and we are once again trying to raise money to help out Children's Miracle Network hospitals within our area. So if you feel like donating or join the team, please go to desktopprods.com/extra-life and donate or join the team. Help us fundraise. Every penny donated goes directly to the hospitals that we're supporting, and they're all tax deductible. So, yay. I really have no idea what the hell that being tax deductible means, and I don't want to explain because fuck all that noise. So yeah, that's desktopprods.com/extra-life. Help save some kids and play some awesome video games. I'm your host, Deadman. Join me today, as always, we have Bovion.
Hello.
Also, if you want to be on a games podcast, send resume to deadman@desktopprods.com. Because we need someone.
We do. I have a couple of people who might be able to help out for a while, but nothing permanent, so...
Get your resumes in. Yeah, so, Buffy, what you been playing?
All right, let's dive right in with... there's a couple of PS2 games. I'm only going to talk about the one. Dragon Ball Z Budokai 3.
Woo!
Honestly, looking back at it, and looking back at... all of the Budokai games I've played and all the Dragon Ball Z fighting games I've played, it's not really my favorite.
Okay, why?
In fact, I would say that 2 was better. There's a few changes they tried to do with the control systems to, I guess, cause less overpowered characters, but it just makes the finishers, like, unbelievably difficult to do. Of course, in 1, they were really, really difficult to do. I think they found the good balance in 2, but by 3, they came up with the burst system, which... Oh. Basically, it's like, okay, either you do your finisher, or you fucking lose.
Man, if only they adopted the burst system from Zero's Wrath, just hit things until your meter gets filled up, they hit the right trigger, then... things happen, and it's awesome. And boobs. Seriously, watch Let Me Play That For You for Zero's Wrath.
I was for a while. I can't remember what episode I was on when I stopped watching. It's completely entertaining, though.
It's really good.
It's like watching an anime.
I got an achievement for drinking. And then boobs. There's a great time event for boobs.
Seriously?
In a very Kamina-esque, you know, hot spring.
So sometimes good. I think you're making shit up and then you're not.
Yeah, anything I say, you pretty much take at face value for Zero's Wrath. That game is crazy. But yeah, with Budokai games, I think the only one that I actually played was the Wii one.
Tenkaichi 3. That one is really fun, I gotta say. It's well balanced. The way you do the finishers is awesome because you're using the Wii remotes. The one thing I find though is a lot of people who play it, they get frustrated doing the finishers because they just try to do it all too quickly. For example, if I play against Starchild, he gets utterly frustrated because he's there flailing about really, really fast. He's like, why am I not doing the moves?
Yeah, I remember when I was playing it, I was Frieza all the time, and I just constantly did like the Planet Crusher thing.
Yeah.
And that only worked about half the time. Like, I'd always move at the exact same speed, like hold the Wiimote up, then swing down. Hold up, swing down. And it would work about, like, I hold up, nothing happens. I keep holding up, nothing happens. I keep holding it up, nothing happens. I put it down, and then something happens.
Were you playing with the Nameless One?
Yes, I was.
His controllers are a bit finicky.
I was playing it on my Wii.
Oh. I don't know how to answer you then. Because, like, I used to have trouble doing it with his Wii, but then when I tried it on Ninja Kitty's Wii, I had no problem. I could do it all perfectly.
Yeah, we're playing on my Wii, and yeah, like every other time I tried to do a fucking finishing move, it wouldn't work. Which was bullshit.
Anyways, as for the not-so-working, what was it, the burst system in Budokai 3, the big problem with it is, I'll kind of explain how it works, is you can charge up your energy, and then, you know, go into whatever mode you want, you know, Super Saiyan 3, whatever. That doesn't, you know, use up energy, it's just like, you have to reach this energy level before you can do it. Okay. And then you enter burst mode, or I think it's called burst mode, it might have another name, but where basically you go all high energy, it's harder to deal damage to you, like it's harder to just stumble your character, and then you have to do your finishing combo. Here's the thing. Your energy bars are now depleting. You technically always have the same amount of energy, but it's like you have a time limit now. You have to do your finisher within that time limit, otherwise you lose all of your energy and you go back down to your first form.
Wow. And so with the combos, is it like a button? Is it like a button combination you have to hit in the right time, or is it like button and stick stuff, or what kind of like ending finishing moves do they have?
It's a button combo. It's a simplified button combo, but it's still a button combo that you've got to get within the time limit.
Yeah, those ones all. You always find some way to just like fuck up with those ones. You need to simple, just like hit square 5 times, like. Damn it, I hit X!
And then, here's the thing. No matter what finisher you're doing, your opponent, after you've done all that, your opponent has an opportunity to fight back. Depending on the finisher, there's two basic things that'll happen. There's the energy charge battle, which I swear is really fucking broken. Basically, it's this timed thing where there's this smaller bar going and you have 3 times of pushing X. And you gotta try and push X when it's at its fullest. And one time, I swear, it was at its fullest, I press it, it's like a half second later, it goes back down to nothing, and like, nothing gets added to the bar. I'm like, what the fuck is this?
Oh, wow. Yeah, that sounds bad.
And then, yeah, if the defender gets a higher energy amount, then not as much damage will be dealt, and it won't have the, you know, earth-shattering consequences.
Mm.
For example, I think one time I was hit with, I was hit with one of these moves, and, like, I charged up a good defense, you know, I got hurt, and then they did it again, and I didn't charge up a good defense, and they blew up the fucking planet. Because that's what you do in Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah, like, in DBZ, it's you scream, then destroy planets. It's basically it. Yeah, I remember that's what, like, with a freeze move, like, the planet thing. If you do it, like, 3 times in quick succession, they actually do blow up the planet that you're on, and then it changes the entire battlefield. It's like, it don't have any ground anymore. You're just now in a giant fucking crater, like, the size of a country.
Yeah. Anyways, and then there's this other option for when you're doing a finisher, and I like this one even less because it has varying degrees of success. So your chances of actually getting your finisher done are ridiculously low with this.
Because
Here's how it goes. This is on the PS2, of course. So after you've actually done the move, there's three different times when basically you have to push one of the four buttons and your opponent has to push one of the four buttons. So either triangle, square, circle, or X.
Mm-hmm.
You push the button. If your opponent doesn't guess the same as you, you strike. If your opponent guesses the same as you, they defend. And each time you do it, the button you use is eliminated from selection. So you have to do it three times. By the end, it's a 50-50 chance of them guessing it right.
Yeah, they had a system kind of similar to that in Mortal Kombat vs. DCU, where it was like it was grappling situations and any situations where you were switching to a different arena, where one person was the attacker, one person was the defender, and so what happened was the attacker would hit like one button, and that was your selected button, and then the defender had like press all the other like, had to press other buttons and try to figure out which button you pushed. Anytime you guessed wrong, you took damage. The defender took damage, and if you got it right, then this rule switched that then the defender became the attacker and the attacker became the defender.
Yeah, now how this one works is, if on the first one the defender gets it right, they will damage the attacker.
Mm-hmm.
If on the second one the defender gets it right, nobody gets damaged. If on the third one the defender gets it right, the defender still takes damage, but the finisher isn't completed. But if on the third one the defender gets it wrong, then the defender takes then the finisher is completed.
Okay, that sounds kind of stupid.
It is really stupid. Because, you could go... as I explained, there's a lot of trouble to go through to do these finishers. And then you end up getting kicked and taking a lot of damage just because you tried to do a finisher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and plus, So the way you said it, so the first time the defender gets this right, then he attacks, then he damages the attacker. If the defender gets it right the second time, no one gets hurt. He gets it right the third time, the defender gets hurt.
Yes. Now, one thing I guess I didn't specify this: if the defender gets it right even one time, the finisher is stopped. Right there. So it won't continue to the next progressive buttons. So if the defender gets it right on the first button push.
Mm-hmm.
Then that's it. The sequence ends.
And so each thing has three button pushes? Like the defender has three chances to stop the finisher?
Yes. Each one with successively higher odds.
Okay, that makes a bit more sense now.
Yeah.
Because the way you described it the first time, it sounded like whenever anyone goes to do a finisher move, then there are three QTEs that happen, three guess things. Get it right the first time, then if the defender gets it right the first time, then hey, he does damage to the attacker. If he gets it right the second time, no one takes damage. If he gets it right the third time, then he takes damage, which sounded really retarded because, hey, I'm getting good at guessing. I'm getting right consecutively, and the rewards for getting right consecutively decrease as time goes on. I was like, awesome, I got it right the first time. Yeah, I got dealt damage to him. I've already got it right another time. Couldn't take any damage. Right, got it right the fucking third time. Why was I hurt? That's the way it sounded the first time, but with this one...
Okay, so yeah, I did forget to mention that.
Yeah, but with the way you're describing it now, it does seem a bit more... It does make a bit more sense, because, okay, I fucked up the first time, and I'll go for the second time. Oh, I fucked up then. I got it right, finished the third time. I didn't take as much damage as I could have, but I got it right, and I managed to defend some of it. That makes a bit more sense now.
Yeah, but I do dislike it because it is like a huge amount of effort to do one of these big finishing moves, and
mm-hmm.
as much as people are like, oh, they get overused in the games, it's what you play a Dragon Ball Z game for.
Yeah, you don't play it for the stellar gameplay or amazing graphics or the earth-shaking story. You play it for, I'm gonna do a Kamehameha!
Well, that you can still do all the time. You can spam the fuck out of that attack. This is just for the big finishers.
I would do Kaioken times 10, then a Kamehameha with the fucking Kaioken and spirit bomb up your ass.
The story mode is also much, much worse than in previous games. Well, I guess just worse than Budokai 2.
Budokai 2 had a weird. Isn't the story mode in every single like Budokai or Tenkaichi game just the anime?
Yes, it's the exact storyline of the anime, but like it's been done in different ways. Budokai 2, they actually did something kind of interesting where it's kind of like a board game. You have the different characters on the field. You choose which ones to move where. So you can change who does what battles. For example, in Budokai 2, as soon as I got Goten, he fought every battle for me because Goku actually is terrible in comparison to Goten.
Oh, okay.
Like, I was playing as Goku, and I tried fighting Kid Buu, and I'm like, I can't do this. Goten beat him in like 10 seconds. Seriously, because he's so small and so goddamn quick.
Okay, so the game itself, so the game is actually kind of discouraging the idea that Goku is the main guy, like the strongest one in the galaxy or whatever.
Which is what
I come to understand from my experience with the Dragon Ball universe.
It's not intentional by any means, but like just they built Goku to fight like Goku, and they built Goten to fight like Goten, but then at the same time, they had to make all the characters on a fairly level playing field because of, you know, it's a fighting game. And so Goten ends up being,
well,
like, it's goddamn amazing.
It's arguable that it's a fighting game.
It's a Kamehameha game.
It's a I'ma hit buttons game. Because, yeah, anytime I play those games, I have no idea what the fuck I'm doing half the time. It's like, okay, so this sticks to move. What one makes me attack? Oh, all of them. Okay. Then just... Ning. But I just kind of like start spazzing out with the controls, and I usually end up winning. Oddly enough.
So anyways, the storyline mode in Budokai 3 is quite a bit different, where you fly around the world and you go to different parts of your story, but you only do one character story at a time. And this is a real pain in the ass when you're doing what's the main story, which is Goku's, because like, okay, so you were dead for like 2 years. Now go do more shit. What happened while I was gone? You don't get to know. You're Goku. Well, fuck. Like, you don't get to experience all the fights in the gameplay, and even without that, they cut so much out. So many cool fight opportunities that they had.
So like, in the story mode, do you jump between different character perspectives, or is it just you choose a guy, then you go in the fight through the storyline, and then you go back to like character select screen and choose another guy and fight through his storyline?
The second one, you do one character storyline at a time, so you don't jump perspectives. So instead of having a nice cohesive story where you switch around characters and get to, you know, experience all the fights and go through all the story, you get, oh, here's a chunk of the story all the way through. Now, here's a chunk of the story all the way through. Now, I guess what you could do is you could go in, play part of it, leave, go to another character, play part of it, if you know the continuity already. And you want to go through all that effort.
Yeah, well, just for the first thing, if you're buying the third Dragon Ball Z Budokai game, you probably know the continuity.
Here's the thing, though. They also take out fights. They also change what order fights happen in. So how the fuck are you gonna know? This one's supposed to be the next fight to happen. Oh wait, no, that didn't happen. Now I'm ahead.
Yeah, that seems like a real shit story. That seems like a real shit way to do the story.
I feel like Budokai 3 was like Budokai 2, but Super Saiyan 4. That's the only selling point they had.
That's it. It's like, hey, you could be a pink monkey man now. Yeah.
You can be Super Saiyan 4 Gogeta! Ooh!
Oh yeah, Gogeta. Wait, was his name Gogeta, or did he choose something else?
Okay, when they did the Potara fusion, which is the first time they fused, it was Vegito, but when they did the fusion stance, it was Gogeta.
Oh. Okay.
Different personalities are dominant depending on how they fuse.
Okay, so when they do the earrings, who's in charge then?
He seems a bit more Vegeta than Goku.
Okay.
Gogeta is Goku.
His hair is very Vegeta.
Yeah, whereas Gogeta is very Goku. Like, there's almost no Vegeta in there.
does he get a bit more pissed off? I feel like it's a Reese's commercial.
I feel like it's a Reese's commercial. Oh, you got some Vegeta in my Goku. Oh, you got some Goku in my Vegeta.
Yeah. New Gogeta. Available where chocolate bars are sold. Also available in Vegito flavor.
That's the one with the peanut butter on the outside.
Oh, that. It gets all of your hands.
So remember, kids, if you want clean hands, go for Gogeta instead of Vegito.
Yeah. T-shirt.
Seems a bit likely for a T-shirt.
Yeah, so anyway. Moving on
from Budokai 3, okay. I've been playing Pokemon Red.
Moving on.
Really? That's all I get to say about Pokemon Red? Well, it's Pokemon Red.
It's a Pokemon game! They haven't changed that all in, like, 20 fucking years!
Exactly, and this is where it started.
Yeah, so, hey, have you played a Pokemon game? Think worse graphics. And you have it. Sorry, I have severe animosity against Pokemon, okay?
Well, then I'm going to play every Pokemon game ever, so I can at least mention every single one.
Really? Just...
Even Pokemon Snap, I'm doing that one too.
Pokemon Snap I have no problem with, okay? Like, the problem
really?
I have...
Are you going to have a problem with it when I use screenshots to send you 1,000 pictures of Pokemon asses?
That'll be a... That'd be a lot of work for not very much reward. I can just delete those. You know, and depending on like how you send them to me, you know, are you gonna send them like through like Skype? Are you gonna put them in the Dropbox? Are you gonna like email them to me? Because either way, I can just ignore
them.
Trust
me, you'll end up seeing them, and you won't be able to avoid them forever.
I'll find a way. I will always find a way.
Voltorb had an ass.
That's an entire different discussion, probably for the anything cast. Just the bizarre anatomy of some of these Pokemon. Like, seriously, how do Voltorbs breed?
Are Magnetons just having a constant threesome?
Yeah. When people die, like when humans die, do they turn into ghost Pokemon, or are those ghost Pokemon just the ghosts of Pokemon?
Or were they always ghosts? Okay, Doug Trio, same question as Magneton.
Well, do we ever see like so Doug Trio? That's like the weird like thing that pokes out of the ground, right?
Well, Diglett is the single one, and Doug Trio is three of them.
Yeah, like
do they breed by splitting? Is that what happens? It evolves into Dugtrio, and then it splits off into three Diglets.
Yeah, does it have like a Graboid style of fucking thing, or are they just like conjoined twins? Where like as you grow up, as they evolve, they get three heads, and then are those like three beings mixed into one? Are they all the same gender? Like, is it like three guys like duct taped together so they all like are able to go off and bone and have like three separate kids with another Doug Trio that's a girl? We're getting too deep into this, man.
Okay, so moving on.
Now you know one of the reasons why I hate Pokemon. Also, random fucking encounters.
Oh yes, I do understand your hatred of random encounters. I will
they
say that.
Destroy games for me. It's the reason why I hate Pokemon, it's the reason why I hate Final Fantasy.
And yeah, that's honestly completely understandable.
It's why Persona 3 and 4 are my hallmarks. They're my benchmark for JRPGs. You see, fucking Persona is how you do Pokemon right. No random encounters, no any of that fucking bullshit. You just go into a dungeon, fight monsters, but you're able to avoid them if you want to. Like if you're low on health, you're able to just go collect weird monsters that you keep inside your pants. Or, I guess, in Persona 3, keep them inside your head. Pull them out with a gun. Video games are weird! Moving on. Get me off this topic.
Okay, so moving on. Mass Effect.
Okay, yes, Mass Effect.
Mass Effect 2.
Yes, actually. Right. You
so
done blown
I've been
up.
Playing. Yes, I got blown right up. So yeah, I got blown up. Shepard died, which was a good way to start the game.
Yeah, you know, kill off your main character. Kind of. It's weird.
And then Shepard comes back to life after 2 years.
Yes, because of Sarah from Chuck.
Or, in the storyline, because of Cerberus.
Yes, being led by Sarah from Chuck. That, well, the group in charge of the program that was bringing Shepard back to life. Quite. Anyway.
Well, she's not actually leading the program.
She's one of the main scientists. It's been a while since I played Mass
Effect. She's one of the main scientists in bringing Shepard back to life, but the one actually in charge is the, what do they call him? The,
Elusive Man?
The Elusive Man. Yeah, I'm like, it's an I word.
He's in charge of Cerberus, not the... Cerberus as an organization. It's not just all scientists. Cerberus wasn't the program that brought Shepard back to life. Cerberus is an organization.
Yes, yes, this is true. This is true. So anyways, yeah. Cerberus brought Shepard back to life, and she's like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, sickness. What do you want?
And now she has to go and find out why human colonies are disappearing and assemble a team to deal with the problem.
I'll give you a hint. It's aliens.
You don't say.
I know there were a lot of fan theories going around at the time that, oh, it was actually like humans who were doing everything. No, it was aliens.
But as for my team, I've only collected one member so far.
Grunt. Oh, yes, who's that? Grunt. Oh, yeah, the Krogan. It sucks I don't have a Krogan in Mass Effect 3 yet.
I haven't actually let him out yet.
Well, come on, Grunt's fine. He was one of my main guys in Mass Effect 2.
Oh, I'm sure he will be. It's just I haven't had a chance to, because one thing I've been doing is I have been trying to live stream my entire Mass Effect 2 experience. You know how that's been going?
Horribly.
Yes, absolutely terribly.
Yes. Remember, I'm subscribed to your Twitch channel, so every time you try to go live, I get an update.
Yeah. Well, I actually figured out all the problems. So for the next one, it will work.
Okay. Let's hope the audio from the game doesn't keep cutting out like it did with your Minecraft one.
That shall not happen.
Yeah, so Mass Effect 2. What are you thinking of it so far?
I've been enjoying it so far. I kind of don't like how there's ammo.
Yeah, okay. Well, it was one of the early adopters of the EA strategy of make every game action. Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely, yeah, I don't enjoy the freaking reloading and the combat. It's not as good.
I quite enjoy the combat in Mass Effect 2. Like, in Mass Effect 1, you know, it was fine, but, like, Mass Effect 2 kind of made everything a bit more streamlined and everything. Like that.
I guess you got a point there that it is a bit more streamlined combat-wise, but what bugs me? There's something specifically that bugs me. Well, one is when I'm running around and I can't find any fucking ammo. It's just like, where the fuck is the ammo? I don't want to use my pistol this whole time. I want my sniper rifle. Give me my sniper rifle. Oh, yes. I don't like the lack of metagel. Or the change of the metagel. So basically, in Mass Effect 1, Unity was a power you could have, which would revive your teammates. Mm-hmm. And metagel was something you could use to heal your and your teammates' wounds to stop you from dying. Now, metagel is Unity.
Mm-hmm.
So, to use
it can also
Unity,
be used to heal.
I have to go.
Metagels can still heal.
How does one do that? I have not had that explained in the game at all.
when you're low on health, you just use Metagel.
Where's that option?
In the power menu. You just select the Unity thing.
No, every time I try to do that, it's like, you have no teammates that are down.
It works in Mass Effect 3.
In Mass Effect 3, maybe, but not Mass Effect 2.
I said, it's been a while since I played Mass Effect 2.
Or I could be wrong, but, like, it doesn't do nothing.
In Mass Effect 2, I, like, plowed through that in, like, 2 days. 40 hours. I got 8 hours of sleep on those 2 days. And I was in university at the time, so I quote unquote had to go to class. Yeah, that game was fun. And it also made me fucking care about the characters in it.
Yes. That's the big thing about Mass Effect, is you care about the characters.
Not Mass Effect 3, you don't. It's really bizarre. I'm just going to go a bit of a tie right here with Mass Effect 3 because you know, brought Mass Effect 2. But in Mass Effect 2, you had a good deal of time to get to know your characters. You know, like, you had loyalty missions. You had, like, any time they talked on missions and stuff. There were much more, like, conversation opportunities to have with them on the Normandy. And so, you know, you got to know all these characters so that when you went and, like, the final mission with everything, it had impact when something went wrong, if something went wrong. Mass Effect 3, it's just, hey, other people are here, and then, oh no, tragedy. Like with fucking Tally. Tally, I had no interaction with Tally whatsoever. I tried, and it was like, Shepard, Shepard, Shepard. And then all of a sudden, she kills herself. It's just, it's like the game was trying to make you care about the people you pass in the hallway every now and then. You know, it's like you're at work, you just say, hey, like the water cooler's like, hey, what's up? How's it going? Okay. How's your weekend? Pretty good. Okay, see ya. And then they die.
So the only way you'd really care about them is if you had a large amount of interaction with them in the first and second game.
Yes, like Mass Effect 3, it's like banking on the fact that, you know, everyone who's playing this game probably played Mass Effect 1 and 2, and so they get to kind of like shirk their responsibilities of building an emotional rapport with these characters. So, it was kind of lazy in Mass Effect 3. So yeah, and go back to Mass Effect 2. I'm sorry. I need to get that off my chest.
Well, actually, I don't have a huge amount to say about Mass Effect 2, primarily because, as I said, I haven't actually played very far into it, because I'm trying to get the freaking live streaming going, because the person who's lending me Mass Effect 2 really wants to see as much of my gameplay as possible.
Then why not just let me play that for you a bit?
Yeah, that's a lot of effort and editing.
I'll do it. Just record the footage and I'll edit it for you.
Then I have to start again.
Don't even get me started on starting again. Fucking Cameo, I had to restart the game 5 times in the middle of recording.
Okay. Only question, if I start again, can I still import my Shepard?
Yes.
Then I will start again and I will record and you can edit it all for me. Thank you, Deadman. You are a wonderful human being.
That's what I do. Occasionally.
And I will keep posting my... In fact, you can post it on the Destro Prod channel, because I'm just keeping my channel going with... No, I'll post it on my channel so they can find it.
Yeah.
I think, maybe. I don't know. We'll see. We'll talk that later.
Yeah, I figure, you know, since you already posted all your Let Me Play Before stuff all over there. Anyway. A lot of awkward silence in this one.
Okay, yeah, so, Mass Effect 2, it's good so far. The combat is pretty good. I'm enjoying using the sniper rifle because I switched from Vanguard to Infiltrator because I was warned that Vanguard kind of sucks in Mass Effect 2.
I thought it was fine.
Anyways, I enjoy being Infiltrator because I enjoy my sniper rifle.
I bet you enjoy infiltrating. You want to infiltrate Garrus, don't you?
Oh, yes, I do.
Hey, Garrus, want to see how far I can take the sniper rifle up my ass?
Seriously, though, I'm going to romance the shit out of Garrus.
Oh, you better, motherfucker.
Everyone I know romances Garrus.
Of course, Garrus is awesome. Happens. He's Batman, okay? He's fucking amazing. He's Batman crossed with Isaiah Mustafa. He'll calibrate you all fucking night. We need to stop talking about sex.
Yeah!
We need to stop talking about sex and Garrus.
We can't not talk about sex and Garrus. We always talk about Garrus sex.
Yep.
It's just the way things are.
Yeah, it is. So, Mass Effect 2.
The Normandy came back.
Yeah, it did.
Kind of.
It's Normandy. It's Normandy Mark II or something.
Yeah.
It's Normandy Wrath of Khan.
No, it's Normandy Into Darkness.
It's Normandy 2 Electric Boogaloo. It's Normandy Dead by Dawn. God damn it.
See, that's actually all I have to talk about today.
Okay, then. Moving on to me, then. So, with me, I beat Prototype 2.
Awesome.
Then I beat it again.
Okay.
Yeah, New Game Plus. So let me just say, so, game developers out there, if you're at all listening, I know you're probably not, but if one of you happens to catch this, when you're going through with the New Game Plus, take out the tutorials. Like, fucking seriously.
Yeah,
in Prototype 2, I started New Game Plus after I beat the main game. Went back to New Game Plus because I wanted to play through it on hard. By the way, I S-ranked that game. I have full 1,000 points in it. So I went through, and by the time I finished the game, my preferred loadout for powers was the whip fists and the hammer fists. I would just, like the whip fist, it had, like, a super long reach on it, and with the hammer fist, it had decent up close stuff, and also pretty wide range. You know, just fall down the fucking area, hammer fist the ground so that everything fucking explodes. And I just pick up the survivors with the whip fist, which, by the way, one hit from the whip fist cuts guards in half.
Sweet.
So I just fucking like dive bomb into a fucking military stronghold, just get the whip fist, just start whipping everybody. Entire area is cleaned out in like 5 minutes. Actually. That wrong syllable. Five seconds. It's fucking awesome. But what always happened, always, was I'd be going through an area just walking along doing my shit, and then I start a mission. Like, I went to the mission, I get a new power, and my loadout gets immediately changed. And then I have to go through the exact same tutorial I went through the first time to use this new power. And I always try to get through it as fast as I can. Then I always end up fucking up the tutorial because I pressed the button at the wrong time. So then I just start the tutorial over again.
That sounds kind of shitty.
It really is. But yeah, that game, it didn't really get any better as I went on with it. Like in terms of story stuff, because it. Okay, so did I actually tell you about the story? What was happening in the storyline at when I was playing it last?
Perhaps you said it was really weird and confusing.
Yeah, so here's the stories that I've been able to deduce so far. So Gentech and Blackwatch, they are doing some illegal biological weapon testing in the middle of New York City because that's the best city to do it in. I guess. And at the same time, Alex Mercer, who's the guy who set off the infection, I guess, in the first place, he is going around and infecting people with the virus and turning them into the Evolved, which are, him and Heller and people with powers. So they like, and then he's doing this because he wants to spread the virus throughout the world and take over the planet. Of course.
As one would do.
Yeah, and so. So that's kind of what's both. That's kind of what's happening. Like Blackwatch is trying. Blackwatch and Gentech are trying to do something because of the virus. They're very Umbrella Corporation with it. Of just, we made a virus. It's a horrible thing. It'll kill everybody. Okay, to what end?
Profit.
Yeah, we did it because. And then Alex Mercer is, you know, trying to take out the world with his fucking monstrosities. And then Heller is just in the middle of it. He was created, like, he originally started out as a member of, you know, the military going in and, like, dealing with Blackwatch and everything. And then he gets turned into and evolved by Heller. By Mercer. And so Mercer is doing his shit and trying to kill Heller because he's trying to stop him. And then Blackwatch and all them are doing their shit and then trying to kill Heller because he's trying to stop them. And Heller the entire time is, like, trying to find his daughter, who it turns out isn't dead. Which is weird, because in the beginning of the game, it looked very dead. Like, the thing is, Heller's entire, like, motivation for going into the city and trying to kill Alex Mercer is avenging his wife and daughter. So his wife, we saw dead. His daughter, we saw teddy bear soaked in blood. In another room where his wife was not. Like, his wife wasn't moved. She was left where she got killed. So, unless the thing that, like, killed his daughter, unless the thing that killed his wife, like, went over, dipped, like, soaked the girl's teddy bear in blood, then walked back over to the girl's room before kidnapping her, I don't see really how she could have survived. But she did. There was possibly some romantic relationship thing happening between Heller and Dana Mercer, Alex's sister. Possibly. It's a bit confusing about that.
Seems like it's a bit confusing about a lot of things.
Yes, but the main thing that really confuses me. So there's one character, Serena Galloway. She is an infected who's able to sense other infected. Well, she's an evolved who's able to detect other evolved. And so she spends the entire game, well, the first part of the game, trying to fuck Mercer, I think. It's confusing. But anyway, so then at one point, no, I'm not trying to fuck Mercer, I'm trying to fuck Heller. And so then Heller says, you know, fuck that, I'm just trying to save my daughter. She's like, you know what, fuck you then. She kidnaps his daughter again. And gives her to Mercer, who's going to use her DNA to perfect the evolution and take over the world with her or something. And then Heller eats Mercer and cures the infection. Somehow. Like, Mercer is able to... Like, Mercer, we see him, like, his final ability is able to just, like, grab other, like, people infected with the virus and then absorb them into himself. And so that's what Heller does. He eats Mercer and then sends tendrils over the entire city to eat all the infected. Because he can do that now. And the game just ends. Yeah, it's like, the city saved. Then Dana's Dark Web was like, what do we do now? End of game. Roll credits. Fuck everything. And yeah, it's just kind of confused. Like, I have no idea what to think of the story in this game. It's just so goddamn confusing in terms of motivation for everybody. Like, Heller and Mercer are the only ones whose motivations make some form of sense. Heller's more than Mercer's. With Heller's, it's, you know, I want to avenge my wife and daughter. And then I realize, oh, wait, people are trying to take over the world. I must stop them. And then Mercer's like, I'm going to take over the world. Why? Because. Like, would it have made more sense if I'd actually beaten Prototype 1 for Mercer's motivation of what he wants to take over the world?
No. It really wouldn't.
Okay. See, the gameplay, it remained mostly unchanged, you know, up until the end. there's a bit more, like, I got to do a bit more in helicopters for, like, missions and stuff. And I gotta say, there's actually one mission that really sticks in my mind. It was, so what I had to do was I, like, possessed, I devoured a helicopter pilot, and then, you know, took a, like, hijacked a helicopter and went to pick up a bunch of scientists who were dealing with this project called White Light. And White Light was, like, something that would destroy the virus. Like, wipe out everything, cure the city and everything. But what happened was Mercer, he snuck in, he, like, got one of his people in the facility to put some of the virus in, to put some of, like, Mercer's DNA inside of White Light. So what would happen was, instead of curing the infection, it would just spread it further. And so what would happen was I hijacked a helicopter, and then I just went around and started picking up the scientists. And as I was picking them up, I started asking questions about, hey, so what can you tell me about White Light? And they'd be like, they started like, wait a minute, how do you know about that? What's their security clearance? Like, oh, nothing really. I just have an interest in, you know, viral, like in viral biology. I was like, oh, do you now? Wasn't that cute? They're treating me like I'm a 5-year-old trying to explain economics to someone. It was like, oh, wasn't that cute? One of the grunts was trying to learn. You know, just fly the fucking plane. Okay. And then I ate them.
It's just hilarious.
I'm just the scientists were treating me like shit, like absolute horse crap. And then I ate them. It was a very cathartic moment. I spent the entire mission like protecting them and doing everything I could to keep them alive. And then they started making fun of me and stuff, and then I just ate them and it was awesome. Even though it did happen, like off screen, it happened inside the helicopter and we just got to hear screaming, it was still hilarious. Yeah. Anyway, so Prototype 2. It's a fine game. You know, it plays well enough. The leveling up system works fine. And everything like from a technical level is, you know, pretty good. But the story, I don't understand it at all.
I had some trouble with the first one.
Yeah, I have no idea what even the first one was about at all. It was like, oh, hey, Mercer, he has amnesia and superpowers. What's going on? Eat people and find out. And I ate some people, and I still had no idea what the hell was going on. Now, anyway, moving on. Tie the Tasmanian Tiger. Remember that game?
Kind of.
This is a old-school style of platformer. It is the style of platformer that kind of got me hooked on platformers. You see, up to this point, like, up to my point in life where, like, I actually started playing these games, I was a very casual gamer. Like, I had a NES I played every once in a while. I go to a friend's house, play some Twisted Metal 3. And, you know, everything was, you know, just fine like that. But then I got a PS2 and a copy of Jak and Daxter. And I just went fucking down the rabbit hole. From there, I got, like, Ratchet and Clank. Then I started getting, like, more and more games. Then I got fucking Sly Cooper, and that's what introduced me to game journalism. But this game, it reminds me a... Tasmanian Tiger reminds me a lot of Jak and Daxter. In terms of general aesthetic of the game, and in terms of, like, the actual, you know, kind of mode of play. So, what happened in this game was, you play as Ty the Tasmanian Tiger. He's a Tasmanian Tiger named Ty. And so what happened was, an evil turkey, I think, with the help of a giant robot, like, sent all the other Tasmanian tigers, who in this universe are, like, ancient warriors of good. He sent them all to, like, some nether dimension. And so now it's up to Ty, and his rangs, as he calls them, to try to stop this evil fucking turkey and bring back the Tasmanian tigers. He does this with the help of a koala and a parrot. The koala is a scientist who's like developing some technology that'll be used to like open up the dimension or rift and bring the Tasmanian tigers back. And you have to do this with the help of like 5 magical medallions. And so the way that this like really feels like a fucking Jak and Daxter game is the fact that you are starting out in some like lush green hub world. And you go to some other area, and it's like, okay, so you meet the koala professor. It's like, hey, I need 17 thunderstones in order to activate this piece of technology. And you go to an area, and you do some weird tasks of, Like, some of them are pretty streamlined of just, hey, walk along this road. Oh, hey, got one. Oh, hey, beat this guy. Oh, hey, got one. But then it also, like, hey, find five hidden things, or hey, eat all these security cameras, or beat a time trial. And each of those unlock, you know, more things. And then each area, like, you go to a, like, inventory screen, kind of, that it just has, like, all you, it has a lineup of the five, like, the Thunderstones that are in that area. And you have, and, like, shows you, tells you what you have to do to unlock each one of them. And there are, like, stat screen all over the place on it of saying, like, how many of these things have you freed? How many of these enemies have you killed? How many of these, like, opals have you found in the area? And it really takes me back. And I really like this style of game. It's something that's not made ever anymore.
No, there's not a lot of 3D platformers out there anymore.
Well, 3D platformers and 3D platformers like this. Like, there are games, like, there are 3D games out there with, like, the elements of platforming in them. But it's never just a pure platformer, and let alone a pure platformer that's designed like this one is. Which is a shame. This is, like, this is a very old-school style of game. Well, old-school now, considering. Which I really hope they start, which I really hope gets a, like, resurgence at some point. Like, other, like, old-school style games have gotten.
Yeah, it's good to see some of the old stuff come back, and That's a style that I've enjoyed at times, although sometimes I've also hated with a passion.
Oh yeah, there are some games out there that make these things really shitty. But Tithe is a pretty good game, in my opinion, because there is combat in the game, but it's kind of an ancillary thing. Like, most of the game is about, you know, moving through the environment and stuff like that, which, you know, as it should be. And the combat is just kind of there. It is kind of a core mechanic in terms of, so the combat that you have is you have a bite, which, like, you know, you bite enemies, and then you have your ranks where you just throw at enemies. But then those two things are also used mainly in, like, more so in, you know, progression of the thing. Like, there's this one power, there's one Thunderstone I had to get. And it was, like, at the top of a hill that had a bunch of security cameras lined up along it. And so what I do is I had to, like, just keep biting my way up the security cameras, which would then get me to that thing. Or there's one that's up at the top of, like, a series of moving platforms. What I have to do is I have to, like, throw my rangs at buttons in order to get the platforms to move in the right way so that I can get the Thunderstone. I keep trying to call it a power core because of Jak and Daxter.
It sucks when the games are so similar that you can't keep them straight.
Yeah, but... But this game is really fun. But it is also really old. Like, the camera controls. There is no camera inversion. So the defaulting camera is inverted. So, you know, you want to turn the camera left, you have to push the stick right. You want to look up, you have to push the stick down. Which is annoying as fuck. Especially considering that in the first-person camera, which you use to, like, aim your ranks for more precision throws, you can have it set up regular. There are no options for the main camera, only for the first person one. Which is stupid and idiotic. And it's unfortunate, like, with the way that I'm playing the game. I'm playing it on my Xbox 360, which is, you know, backward compatible shit. But the game is emulated really badly. It chops like a motherfucker. Like, it's just playing along. Like, it's just running along. The frame rate will just cut out randomly every once in a while, which can make things really annoying. But the game is still pretty fun. It's an old school style platformer that I never see any more of that, which is unfortunate because this is, like, one of my favorite genres ever. But it's still fun. It's still fun to play it. It's nice to just, like, get thrown back to this style of gaming that we don't see anymore. And I do enjoy it. I'm gonna keep playing it. And, like, a Tithe of Tasmania Attacker 2, and hope the Tithe, well, and Tithe of Tasmania Attacker 3, and hope that those ones are actually playable on the Xbox 360. And then realize that the only recent Tithe of Tasmania Attacker game that came out was on fucking iPhone. Let's see. Tithe of Tasmania Attacker. It's still fun. I might be doing a Let Me Play That for you of it. I'm not sure yet, but for right now, it is a really fun game, and I'll keep playing it. And I need to go to the bathroom, so we're going to take a quick break, and I'll be right back. Actually, we'll be right back, sorry. So, yeah, see you guys in a few seconds. folks, we're back. So moving on to the next game, Fracture. Speaking of old games, so this is a game that I'm starting for a new Let Me Play That For You series that I know for a fact that no one has watched. It's with Fracture. What it is, so the story of this game is, I think, like 200 years in the future, like climate change happened. The polar ice caps melted and the earth started flooding. And so in the United States, they developed this kind of like earth moving equipment. They kind of just made scientific earth bending.
All right.
So they went along the coastline and just raised like the earth up like a few feet, or like a few dozen feet, so that the water wouldn't like overflow the country. But they didn't manage to say, like the center of the country. So the country is now divided into the like east and west coasts. And the people on the east coast, they called themselves, I believe, the like Republic of Pacifica or something. Yeah, each one of them named themselves after, like, they kind of turned into their own countries. Like, one of them is the enemies are the Pacificans, which is like the Republic of Pacifica, which they're on the Pacific Ocean, obviously. And then we have the alliance of the Atlantids, Atlantic Alliance or something. The Atlantic Alliance, and they are, you know, on the Atlantic Ocean. And so these countries then descended into civil war because of how they thought humanity should evolve. The Pacificans believed in genetic augmentation. They believed in like going in and actually tweaking the genetic material within the human body to make them, you know, more powerful, stronger, faster, better. Meanwhile, the people of the Alliance, they believed in cybernetics and, you know, technology and stuff. They believed in making the $6 million man.
Right.
And so that's how the war started. The Alliance said, hey, guess what? We're going the way of cybernetics. We are outlawing genetic augmentation. The people on the West, I believed, they said, you know what? Fuck that noise. We're seceding. We're the Republic of the Pacifica. We believe in genetic augmentation. And then war started.
So they could not agree on how to augment humanity, so they decided to go to war.
Yes.
Makes a lot of sense. And, of course, there's super soldiers on each side.
Kind of. It's bizarre. Like, they say, like, it's supposed to be, like, super soldier people, but they're kind of not. They're just... The Pacificans have basically turned themselves into aliens. They're just nameless, faceless things from an alien organization, from an alien race that you have to try to destroy. They, like, glow green. They have, like, no human faces. They don't exactly look... They look humanoid, but not fully human. Meanwhile, you look like someone tattooed some USB symbols onto your face. Because, you know,
okay. Cybernetics.
Yeah, that's actually how they contextualize their HUD. Like, they contextualize your HUD by the fact that, hey, you have cyber eyes.
So, cybernetic enhancement HUD? I'm not sure how I feel about the whole, working HUDs into the storyline thing. Like, sometimes it's good, and sometimes it's real bad.
Well, this one is one of the kind of in-the-middle bad things, because this is a third-person game.
That kind of ruins their whole explanation.
So it's contextualizing... Yeah, it's like contextualizing the HUD for the camera floating 7 feet behind you.
Do they explain why it's in third-person?
Nope. It's just, hey, it's in third person. Why? Like, then how is contextualizing the HUD for my cybernetic eyes explain why I'm floating behind myself? Shut the fuck up or I'll hit you. But yeah, so you're playing as Jet Birdie, member of the Alliance, who is, you know, cybernetic people. And the main gameplay gimmick of this game is the Entrencher. Basically, terrain deformation. With the Entrencher, you're able to, you know, like, point at a certain area on the ground and either raise or lower the terrain. Basically, you're able to make a hill or a really big pothole. And, you know, this is the way they like them specify this is, hey, use it for cover. You know, like you're able to just like sink down the hole so that you're able to, so that enemies will like have a harder time getting to you or something, give yourself the higher ground, the advantage. Or if you're like in the middle of a bind, you just shoot up a hill in the middle of your field so they can't shoot you anymore. And I will say this, the train deformation is pretty cool. It's a gimmick, I know. And it doesn't take away from the fact that the game is really old.
Right.
Not in terms of actually like the game itself, but the feel of the game is really fucking old. But it actually just looks really cool because just like the popping up the ground and stuff, it looks really awesome. And there's also like there's a Bugs Bunny rocket launcher.
What?
So what you do is it fires out a missile, and the missile goes underground. You see the ground actually start like deforming above the missile. So they're just going along the ground. You just see this like little bump following along the ground. It leaves a little bit of a trail behind it.
Does it ever take a wrong left turn at Albuquerque?
It doesn't turn. It just goes a straight line until it hits something or until you blow it up, which is a shame because I could have made so many more jokes about taking a wrong turn at Albuquerque. Yeah, and they also have grenades that like shoot up giant pillars of rock out of the ground. You have grenades that just like deform the ground in regular ways. And like I said, it's a gimmick, but it's a really cool gimmick. And I really like it. But in terms of gameplay, this game, it feels like a third-person shooter from the 90s. In that there are no cover mechanics. There is no like aiming on anything on half the guns, and the aiming and the guns that do have the aiming, you have to click on the right stick for it. You're able to jump a bit more in this game in terms of actual height and stuff and maneuverability, but it all just feels really old. It feels like this game came out around the same time as like Gears of War. And it was totally like, it's, and the game was totally like a rival for Gears of War, which, fuck no. Like, say what you love about Gears of War, that game's at least, you know, the game is popular for a reason.
Yeah, it does have a decent cover system. I honestly like the speed reload system in Gears of War.
Yeah, the active reload stuff.
Yeah, the some of the other aspects leave much to be desired, but overall, it's a decent game.
Yeah, from a mechanical sense, it's pretty good. But this game coming out at the same time, taking all these like ideas from when Doom 3 was originally concepted, I guess. It just feels really outdated, especially in today's day and age. But it's a bad kind of outdated. Like with Ty, that is a kind of an outdated system, but it's an outdated system that still works today and that I wish would come back. This one, it's an outdated system that got outdated for a reason.
It's an outdated system that should stay the hell dead.
Yeah. But it's functional, I'll say that. You know, while it's not necessarily fun or in any real way, it's at least functional.
Unlike some of the other games you've decided to do videos of.
Yeah, like fucking Dark Sector. One out of the three shots. So yeah, I'm going to keep playing this game. Hopefully it stays at least engaging, or at least stuff is happening that I can commentate on. Then one of like another Dark Sector or like fucking Cameo. Where it just gets to a point where I'm just so fucking bored with it. So yeah, then moving on to the final game I've been playing. Warframe, I checked that out again. It's now an open beta instead of closed beta. And I actually played it with a friend this time. Me and Punchatron got into a game.
Okay.
And do you remember what I said the first time I like talked about that game? Because I don't.
No, I'm sorry. I have a real bad memory.
Yeah, I do too. But I'm pretty sure I said some kind of not great things about the game. Like I remember talking about how it looked cool and like the gameplay was adequate, but it was kind of boring in terms of, you know, doing stuff. But that's because I was playing by myself. But it's one of those games that you need to play co-op. It's one of those games you need to go in with a team of friends and just play. I'm talking about the game. Which I did with Punchatron, and it got a lot more fun when I was playing it with a friend. And, you know, since he was there, he actually got to help like teach me some of the things I didn't really understand the first time through, like with some of the power stuff that was going on. And now that I actually am into it and got some powers, so I'm playing as the Loki class, which is the assassin class. And so going in there, I got this power, the Switch Teleport, which is my new favorite ability, which lets me like immediately warp, which lets me immediately switch locations with like enemies or allies. And so this really came in handy because there's one mission that we played where we're going in. So in this world, there are like a few different factions. There's like you, I believe you're the Tenma. You're this kind of like ancient warrior race who I guess the galaxy thought was extinct. And then there is this other race, the Garrix, who are like these evil people who are like trying to take over the galaxy or something so far. And then there are the Flood, basically. just space infection that turns people into horrible monsters.
So, yeah, like the Flood or whatever those things from Dead Space are. Something similar to that.
Yeah, and so we were in a mission like fighting the Flood. Wait, I'm just going to keep calling them the Flood because I don't actually know what they're called. Yes, we were fighting the Flood, and we got to this point where it was just really horrible, like weird platforming stuff that we didn't fully understand. And so what would happen was I just started messing around. I'd eventually understand it. Then Punchatron would try to do it, and he couldn't. So what we did was just, we got to a place where we were both like in range, and I just switch teleported so that he was up on the rail, and I just got to do it again, which was actually pretty easy. And it was actually a really interesting way of, you know, cooperative gameplay of, I don't know how to do this fucking jump. Okay, I'll do, like, but I do, so I'll just jump it, then switch with you. And it was a really cool way of doing it so that the gameplay kept moving. Nothing really got too tedious. And it was never just a point of, come on, dude, just fucking make the jump already. God! It also introduced a running, like, the world traversal mechanics to me, which are actually kind of interesting because you have wall runs, which I didn't know you had.
Wall runs.
Yeah, in this game, you're able to run up walls. You're able to run around columns. Like, one of the jumps that Quadron had trouble with was there's this big pillar of, like, infected gunk in the middle of this jump. And so what we do is we had to, like, dash, like, sprint towards that thing, jump, then run around it and jump off. Pudge couldn't do it. Like, I had trouble doing it. He'd always end up like, running toward it, but not actually sprinting, just regular running, and then jumping off into death. Or there are a couple times where you just run straight off the edge. Like, it's like, okay, I'm sprinting toward it, and I'm dead. And so I managed to get it, like, the first couple tries, and so we did that switch thing there, and yeah, this is one of those games that's just really fun to play with other people, but it's just kind of boring to play with yourself.
I really need to,
make your jokes.
I really need to get into this game because it sounds really interesting.
Yeah, it's not so much really interesting as it is. It's pretty fun. I'll say that. And hopefully at some point we'll start doing like video content for this game, because this is kind of the game that this is like a game that would be very good for us to play together. Like, just get you, me, Pudge, and James in on a game and just have all four of us going. It could be fun.
It could be fun. And, I don't know, I like the sound of it.
Yeah. And actually, interesting thing. It's made using old Dark Sector tech.
So it's like, how Dark Sector could have been good?
Yes, pretty much. Like, it's not so much using game mechanics, it's using, like, art assets. Like, all of the frames that you're playing as, which is, like, your character classes, those were all, like, ripped from the Dark Sector asset thing. Because they all look like kind of just weird bio or, like biotech things where it looks like metal, but it's, like, warped like flesh type thing. You understand my meaning? But they all look really cool. And this game, it plays well. There's a power slide in it.
Anything with a power slide.
Yeah, I should have just said it got a fucking power slide in it.
So,
it's a Warframe. It's a Warframe. For a free-to-play game, it's pretty fun. The worlds, while they are not exactly, you know, visually stunning to look at, they at least they do have some kind of interesting elements to them. The enemies, they are kind of like indistinguishable at a distance, but when you get up close, you can kind of see like the little differences in between them. In terms of like the Garrick, but with the infected, the Flood, they have like a bunch of different classes to them, and every single one of them, every time you see them, they're just like, oh fuck, one of these guys. You know,
no matter what kind it is, it's like, oh fuck this one, it's my least favorite one. Oh fuck that one, it's my least favorite one.
No, I have my least favorite one. It's the fucking Ancient Healer. The Ancient Healer, they're really slow class, but when they hit you, they like send you flying, they stun you, they're able to like reach into you and rip out some of your health and heal themselves back up. They're able to heal all the enemies around them. There's a Toxic Ancient, which what it does is like even after you kill it, it leaves behind a toxic cloud of death that will kill you hurt you if you run through it. The fucking Chargers. Oh god, the fucking Toxic Ancients. Ancient Healers. Oh, that game is fun. Get some friends together and play some levels of it. It's pretty cool. I like it. But we only like it if you play with friends. If you play it by yourself, it's really fucking boring. So that is what we're playing. Then on to news. So our first piece of news: Telltale Games have announced Poker Night 2, the sequel to Poker Night: The Inventory.
So, I had never actually heard of Poker Night before this.
Yes, what Poker Night...
Yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
Okay, so what Poker Night the Inventory was it was a poker game, but with a bunch of different characters in it. Like, there was the Heavy from Team Fortress 2. There was Strong Bad. They had Tycho from fucking Penny Arcade. And Max from Sam & Max. And so the Poker Night the Inventory 2 has Brock Sampson from the Venture Brothers, Ash from Evil Dead and Army of Darkness, Sam from Sam & Max, and Claptrap from fucking Borderlands. And so I'm guessing this all taking place in the inventory. The bar is being tended by Moxie from Borderlands, and it's being presided over by GLaDOS from Portal.
Hell yes.
GLaDOS is the dealer. And, yeah, from what I understand, it's just kind of a basic poker game with a really interesting framework to it. Which, okay. Like, I'm not exactly a big fan of poker, but I am a pretty big fan of those characters. Well, 2.5 out of 4, I guess.
Yeah, well, I'm not a huge poker fan either. I would enjoy seeing the character interactions. I guess that's the big selling point of these games.
Yeah, that's the big selling point with these games. Is it's kind of the same, kind of a similar thing with like The Walking Dead, where you don't really come to this game for the mechanics or like the technical aspects of it. You come there for the characters. So yeah, Poker Night: The Inventory. It's going to be coming out at some point. I don't believe they've announced an official release date for it yet. Let me just look this up, since I've closed the article. Yeah, so, Poker Night 2 is actually available for pre-order right now on Steam for like $5. And it's going to be actually coming out later this month. I'm going to be available on PC, 360, and PSN, and a Mac version is currently in development, but no idea when that's actually going to be released. So, awesome. Maybe on our next piece of news. Another Telltale piece of news, actually. They finally revealed what their fucking Fables game is going to be. So, the game will be The Wolf Among Us, where you'll play as Bigby Wolf, also known as the Big Bad Wolf. So, for those who don't know what like the Fables universe is, it's a DC comic series, I believe, printed under their Vertigo imprint. And it's basically what would happen if all like the classic like public domain literary characters like Snow White, Big Bad Wolf, fucking Three Little Pigs, all them, what if they existed in our world? and also apparently pro-Israel stuff. I just found that out. Apparently, like Bill Willingham, like the guy who wrote the guy who writes Fables, is like really pro-Israel, and that's apparently what the entire comic's about. Some weird pro-Israel thing. But it's, anyway,
I guess it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, so anyway, so in this game, you're playing as Bigby the Big Bad Wolf, who is the sheriff of Fable Town, where all the like classic public domain characters have been living. And so what you'll be doing as Bigby is you'll be trying to keep characters like the Three Little Pigs, Mr. Toad, and other people such, and other such characters, from being discovered by the humans, us, the mundane people. So Dan Connors, the CEO of Telltale, said about the game, quote, "Developing The Wolf Among Us based on the Fables universe has allowed our studio to build upon all the hallmarks of what makes our episodic series so engaging for players. Through an evolution of our approach to choice and consequence, we can further explore the complexity of each and every iconic character in the universe, in a universe rich with untold history from the darker sides of the storybooks." So I'm really looking forward to this game. It looks really cool. It seems to have a similar kind of art style to The Walking Dead, just from the picture that was released, and I fucking love Bigby, man.
Yeah, I love Bigby as well, although probably my favorite moment with Bigby was when he was a little girl.
Yeah. Read the comics, it'll make sense. So anyway, The Wolf Among Us is set for release this summer on Xbox 360, PS3, PC, and Mac. So moving on to Xbox News. Ace Team's Xenoclash 2, the sequel to their fucking bizarre Xenoclash 1, is going to be coming out on April 30th. It'll be launching on April 30th on Steam for $20. And a PSN and Xbox and XBLA version are also in development, but Atlas, the publisher of the game, has not confirmed a release date for those yet. So we're going to be getting new Xenoclash by the end of the month. Sickness.
I haven't really played through the first one.
It's bizarre. I haven't played it in a while, but it's still really weird. Also, the game is actually currently up for pre-order on Steam for 10% off, so check that out. So, moving on to our next piece of news. LucasArts has shut the fuck down.
Yes, I've been hearing of this all over the place.
Yeah, so LucasArts, before they started making really shitty Star Wars games, they actually have a like long history of producing really amazing fucking adventure games. Like Grim Fandango, Day of the Tentacle, the original Monkey Island games, I think. They had this huge fucking thing. But after Disney got their hands on LucasArts and all their shit, they have since shut down the studio. That means 150 people are out of a job, and that Star Wars 1313 and First Assault have both been canceled.
Way to go, Disney.
Yeah, so I'm a company spokesperson for LucasArts. Released the following statement to IGN, saying, "After evaluating our position in the games market, we've decided to shift LucasArts from an internal development to a licensing model, minimizing the company's risk while achieving a broader profile of quality Star Wars games. As a result of this change, we've had layoffs across the organization. We are incredibly appreciative and proud of the talented teams who've been developing our new titles."
We're very proud of them as we kick them out the fucking door.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's unfortunate. Because I was really looking forward to Star Wars 1313. And, you know, those people, they... Say about LucasArts in later years. They had talented people working there.
Yeah, and none of them deserve to be jobless.
Yeah. But anyway, Game Informer is actually reporting LucasArts said that there is a possibility that Star Wars 1313 could still come out via licensing. They could, like, sell off the IP to another company and just have them, like, make it while, you know, LucasArts just kind of holds on to IP rights, I guess, or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Moving on to our next piece of news. Two more characters have been added to the Injustice Gods Among Us roster, thus filling out the roster completely. So, the two new characters added, these were revealed in a screenshot that was tweeted by Warner Brothers employee Brandon Alexander, showing that Killer Frost and Ares have been added to the playable roster. Which, you know, Ares, yeah, that makes sense, but Killer Frost. A bit strange. So anyway, that brings the roster up to, let's see, 24 playable characters. I believe.
Somehow I knew you were going to say 24.
Hmm. I figured it'd be 52. You get it?
I get it.
That's funny. So the character, so the playable roster as it stands right now is Aquaman, Ares, Bane, Batman, Black Adam, Catwoman, Cyborg, Deathstroke, Doomsday, The Flash, Green Arrow, Green Lantern, Harley Quinn, Hot Girl, The Joker, Killer Frost, Lex Luthor, Nightwing, Raven, Shazam, Sinestro, Solomon Grundy, Superman, and Wonder Woman. And of course, we know that that playable roster will be updated to 28 playable characters when the DLC hits, which, you know, they promised 4 playable DLC characters. Yep. So the game is due out on, so Injustice Gods Among Us is set for release on April 16th for the PS3 and 360. I believe there isn't going to be a Wii U release.
I realize that if I ever get Injustice Gods Among Us, I'm going to spend my entire time beating the piss out of Superman.
Oh yeah, totally. That's kind of what you do. And oh man, I cannot wait for this game to come out. I have this game pre-ordered, by the way. Just letting y'all know. So I'm going to be getting my hands on it. It's going to be so awesome. Yeah, and so as our final piece of news, another trailer, a trailer has been released for the Project Versus J, which has since been renamed J Stars Victory Versus, which, for those who don't know, is the team battle game that's kind of the a celebration of Shonen Jump's 45th anniversary, and just combining a bunch of different Jump characters. And when it was initially announced, they had confirmed Toriko from Toriko, Luffy from One Piece, and Goku from Dragon Ball Z. But with this new trailer, it's also been revealed that Naruto will be in the game. You know,
cool.
Natch. Let's see, J-Stars Victory Versus is set for release sometime in Japan this year for the PS3 and Vita. No word yet on the American release date. So that does it for news. Time for new releases. So, coming out this week, the week of April 9th, we have Gianna Sisters Twisted Dreams coming out for Windows on PC on April 9th. We have Guacamelee coming out on the PS3 and PS Vita. We have Fatal Frame being added to PS2 Classics on the PS3 network. And nothing else. Oh no, wait, Shoot Mania. That's getting a full release now on April 10th. So then, coming out next week, the week of April 16th, we have Shin Megami Tensei, Devil Summoner, Soul Hackers for the Brick of Shit, Injustice Gods Among Us for the 360 and PS3.
So next week's our good release week.
Yes. Pandora's Tower coming for the Wii. Not the Wii U, the Wii. Which is bizarre. And we're also getting a re-release of Kirby's Adventure for the Wii U. So, woo. Yeah, I can't fucking wait to get my hands on Injustice. It's so fun! Gonna run train everybody. Nice. Gonna fucking main Batman and run train everybody. Fuck all of them.
Makes me want to visit again. I mean, last time was Persona 4 Arena, but...
Yeah. This time, fucking got Injustice.
Next time, Injustice Gods Among Us.
Yeah. Forced to educate to play Superman.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's going to do it for this week, I guess. Thank you all for joining us. So, as always, you can follow us on Twitter. You can follow us at DeathstoreProds. I am at Deadman_DProds. We have at Bubbywan. You can like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/DeathstoreProds. Subscribe to us on YouTube at YouTube.com/DeathstoreProdsVids for myself and James, occasionally, for Last One Out. And you can subscribe to Bubbywan at YouTube.com/Bubbywan for all his book or all his stuff. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us some reviews. Don't want to see more or less, etc. And you can find us on DeviantArt at destoprods.deviantart.com. This week on the website, we're going to be having the anime podcast this Thursday, as well as the anime club. This week, we're going to be taking a look at episodes 7 and 8 of Samurai Champloo. Then on Friday, we're going to be having a commentary track for Monty Python and the Holy Grail. as part of Born the BBC Month. Then on Sunday, we'll be having Nathan Cast Live. It's our 50th fucking episode. Woo!
Victory.
It's probably gonna be like every other episode, except we'll yell every time I say 50. Then we'll have comics next Wednesday, movies next Friday, as well as the commentary track. That we'll be watching the Doctor Who movie. And who knows? I might release personal issues. Punchatron will probably definitely be releasing a new Aimless Wanderings because, you know, he's on the ball.
It's much more reliable.
Oh, yeah, totally. It's been, like, what, like 2 months since I last released personal issues?
I don't know. I stopped counting.
It's coming, okay? I'll work on it this week. I promise. So, yeah. But I'm sure to check out the site every day for news, possibly reviews, and videos from myself, Obi-Wan, and James. He has at least 4 more videos coming up that I'm currently editing right now. But until all that stuff, I'm the Dead Man.
I'm Obi-Wan.
We will see you guys next time.